Okay, now let's move on to item 1181, please.
Direct procurement services in consultation with the Office of the City Attorney to conduct contract negotiation with Dr. Dennis Rosenbaum to serve as the independent compliance officer and community liaison for the Department of Justice settlement agreement.
Okay, let me call up Ellen Osenak from our City Attorney's Office and Justice Paul DeMunis, who's here as part of the team that we are recommending for selection. Just some context points, first of all, and I know others here on the council, particularly Commissioner Britz, may have some as well. First of all, our settlement agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice is unique because it's a collaborative approach. We are willingly and diligently implementing the agreement, and as I'll say more later, we don't regard the agreement as the only set of objectives that we have to reach in these issues. The role of the community, the compliance officer community liaison is large and complicated. It involves auditing, surveying, and analysis. It involves oversight, surveying community members, and surveying the performance of the Bureau. And then there's a community engagement piece, which is equally important, which is supporting the Community Oversight Advisory Board, assisting with the design and the evaluation of the community engagement and outreach plan, and constantly seeking community input and review of policy, procedures, and practices. So there's a very important dual role here, and in the opinion of those of us who brought this particular proposal forward, we believe that this team of people is well-equipped to carry out that dual role in a complex set of responsibilities that are outlined in the agreement. Commissioner Fritz, do you have any other opening comments before we start?
Thank you, Mayor Hales. And it's important to note that there was a presentation of the three candidate teams to the public on September 29th, and a selection advisory committee gave input to the council on whether or not all three teams should be forwarded for public consideration for the 30-day comment period. That hearing, as I said, was on September 29th, and I watched it from home because it was 5 days after the crash that killed my husband. I came in to talk with the candidate teams, having heard the advice of the advisory committee that they had concerns about all three of the teams, and in particular about the team that we're proposing to select, that there wasn't a strong local presence that was being proposed for the process for the Community Advisory Board. The council interviewed all three of the candidate teams. I was fortunate to be paired with Commissioner Fish in my interviews, and we dug deep into some of the questions that each of the council members had about each of the teams. And as part of that conversation, it became clear that Justice DeMunis had not been able to be present for the public presentations, but would be willing to come and talk to council afterwards. And so we did take community input over 30 days. The council also did significant work in background checking, in looking at the strengths and challenges of each of the teams. And it was, frankly, meeting with Justice DeMunis that convinced me that the challenges that the Selection Advisory Committee had identified were, in fact, going to be addressed through his participation. So I just want to frame this public hearing about the proposed selection with that background information, because the public saw the presentations which were available online, gave input, had seen the input, but weren't as aware of those personnel action interviews that the council engaged in.
Okay. Thank you. Ellen, would you like to lead off?
Yeah, sure. Ellen Osenak from your City Attorney's Office, and I have here today with me Deputy City Attorney Judy Prosper. I just wanted to frame the resolution that is before you all today, which is to authorize procurement services to enter into contract negotiations with the Rosenbaum team, and Judy Prosper will be leading those negotiations, so I wanted to introduce her to you and the public. We're ready to assist council and look forward to working with the team.
Thank you both. Welcome, Justice DeMunis. I know you have a statement from the leader of your team and probably some comments of your own as well.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Paul DeMunis. I do have a brief statement to read. I don't want to get the cart before the horse here, so I hope this is all right. I have a brief statement from Dr. Rosenbaum, Dr. Watson, and Mr. Christoph. I also have some personal comments that I would like to make to address this matter. So let me start first with the statement from Dr. Rosenbaum and the other members of his team. Dear Mayor, Council members, and residents of Portland, we're honored to have this opportunity to help improve police services in the City of Portland. We will bring integrity, independence, transparency, knowledge of policing, and expertise in mental health crisis to the position of compliance officer and community liaison. We will fully engage the public and provide diverse opportunities for community stakeholders to be heard and understood. We will work closely with the Portland Police Bureau, the City of Portland, other agencies, and community members as we oversee the implementation and evaluation of police reforms. We intend to draw upon the latest scientific knowledge and best practices in the field of policing when measuring change and making recommendations that are tailored to the unique concerns of the Portland community. We're confident that our expertise in police management and training, community policing, use of force, mediation, and police responses to mental health crises can be used to encourage fair, respectful, compassionate, and effective policing in Portland. We are eager to devote our time and energy to help the City of Portland move in this direction and thus strengthen the public's trust and confidence in the Portland Police Bureau. That's from Dr. Rosenbaum, but I would like to offer my own comments if this is an appropriate time to do so.
Please.
To share with you that when I was contacted by Dr. Rosenbaum and his team, I expressed some reservations at the very beginning about the fact that they did not have a Portland presence, if you will. But they assured me that I needed to do my own research, and I did. I fully vetted them. I concluded that this team, particularly Dr. Watson, is one of the foremost authority in mental health crises with regard to the interactions between people suffering a mental health crisis and police. I impressed upon these individuals that before I would agree to join their group, they had to understand that Oregon is a different place, that Portland is a different place, that we do things in Oregon our own way, our Oregon way, which is complete access to government and complete transparency in government. And you can tell by their statement, which is in there, reflects that commitment. I also said that, in my opinion, and one of the reasons I agreed to join this, is I think that the COCL, and in particular, the community liaison position, is one of the most crucial and integral parts to the successful implementation of this agreement. I think it's absolutely vital, and this is a chance for Portland, I think it's absolutely vital that community voices be heard in this process, and not only that they be heard, but that they be understood. I also, in my own personal life, know the value of a community voice. In my own private life, I am a community voice and an advocate for reform of the child welfare policies in this state. I'm an advocate for justice reinvestment and the use of programs with regard to reentering prisoners. I have been involved in doing those things in our community. So I believe in the voice of the community. And so I'm going to dedicate myself in this process to making sure that the community voices are heard, that they're understood, and that they are an integral part of the implementation of this agreement. I think there needs to be a physical presence here for the liaison officer, and I'm encouraging them that I want to have access to office space here. I want to start right away, as soon as the negotiations or whenever I can, to start reaching out to the communities that are affected by this group and starting that dialogue. I also want to prepare a master plan of how we are going to conduct these meetings, how we would record what we're doing, and how the public would have access to all of that information that comes out in the various meetings and things that we're conducted. So I want to assure the citizens of Portland and assure you that I am completely committed to performing my role here, which I see primarily as part of the COCL as the community liaison officer, and I'm completely committed to spend as much time as necessary In my own private life, my wife spends 3 days a week in Portland, and she's overjoyed that I could spend 3 days a week at the minimum working on this project up here. She takes care of her disabled sister here in Portland, and when I said I had finally agreed to do this, she said, great, you'll be here 3 days a week at least. So I'm looking forward to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for either our city attorney staff or Justice DeMunis?
This isn't really a question, but Justice DeMunis, I have to say that I always enjoyed arguing ballot title challenges in front of you, so I look forward to working through in a different capacity. And thank you very, very much for your work on justice reinvestment.
Thank you. Commissioner Novak, what was going through my mind when I was watching you was, I bet he'd like to ask me a few questions.
Turnabout's fair play.
Justice DeMunis, I understand that you were selected to be part of the mediation in the settlements agreement.
Could you
talk a little bit about that, please?
Yeah. I think what happened there was when the Portland Police Officers Association and the Albina Ministerial Alliance sought intervention in federal court into the litigation that was going on between the Department of Justice and the City of Portland, making it a much more robust litigation experience. Judge Simon was very interested in having the parties work through a mediator, and I did work with them for probably 8 months, if you will, working with all of those groups in that process. But one thing that was never in controversy and never apart was the COCAL. There was always it was never an issue in any of this, always in complete agreement about how that would be.
Commissioner Fish, I think you had a question.
Justice DeMunis, first, was Commissioner Novak always sufficiently respectful of the court when he made his argument?
I have to say he was one of the most brilliant advocates we had.
Please don't say that.
And we miss it.
See what you did?
Please don't say that. Please don't say that.
That's why I was afraid of those questions coming back.
For people that don't know you, perhaps the same way lawyers who have appeared before you, the judicial community, and your community know you, I think it's a fair question to ask you. When you were Chief Justice, you made a personal commitment to improve access to justice. And that's been a recurring theme in your career prior to and during your Chief Justice tenure. Why is that a cause you care about, and what do you consider the most important piece of reform that you had something to do with during your leadership tenure?
Thank you, Councilman Fish. Well, I think all of us are products of our background. As many of you know, I was raised poor in Northeast Portland, enlisted in the service right after I graduated from high school. No one in my family had ever been to college. I saw the justice system as a young person in a certain way, and so that's affected me, obviously, my whole life. As a young lawyer, I was very much involved in work involving making sure that the system operated fairly, and in particular, one case affected me greatly, and that happened to be someone who did not speak English in a murder trial, and I was eventually able to get that person exonerated, and the work that we did in that case actually transformed the system around the country for providing interpreter services in all different levels of things. So access to justice to me is that the public can access the courts also. And so we have done a lot to make sure that the public sees the justice system up close and personal. One example would be when I became Chief Justice, I developed a plan to take the Supreme Court throughout the state of Oregon, and we heard cases throughout the state of Oregon during my 7-year tenure. I'm pleased to say that my successor has continued that process. We traveled to Prineville, Bend, Pendleton, Ontario, Vail, Enterprise, Lakeview, Klamath Falls, all conducting town meetings after our real cases were heard and argued, and so that people would have a feeling for how justice works and how to access them. On a slightly more impersonal level, though, one of my projects was what we call eCourt, which we now have an electronic court system in this state that's been implemented in just over 10 counties. It's been implemented successfully here in Multnomah County. And one of the goals there was to make sure that people have access to the courts 24/7, if you will, by building literally a virtual courthouse. So those are some of the things that I've been involved in. I've been a strong proponent of pro bono services and legal aid. I was fortunate enough to be honored by the Campaign for Equal Justice for my leadership in access to justice and providing access and justice for people who could otherwise not afford that. So my goal has been to make sure that the system operates fairly and can be accessed by all citizens. And if I take that back to what we're doing here, I think the most crucial thing here is that there is a voice for the community here. That is there's probably very few people that know this agreement better than I did. I read it hundreds of times during the mediation process, and I came to the conclusion that this is one of the most crucial pieces in providing the community voice.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much. Any other questions? We may have more at the end, but thank you all. And then let's take public testimony if we have folks signed up.
Yes, we have six people signed up. The first three are Ben Pickering, Joe Walsh, and Mary Ng.
And I see the U.S. Department of Justice is here. I don't know if they've signed up, but they might want to speak.
So we're speaking on the $26 million settlement still. This is the DOJ. So when I was younger, my family would give me allowances after I got my chores done during the week. So I was allowed to go get things that I'd like to get, so I'd save up. But, what if we did this one thing? I mean, $26 million, I mean, you could throw it out there. I mean, on anything you're trying to work at. But what if they achieved their goals, whoever it was, and then gave that money to the people that achieved it? I mean, everybody's got their voice and opinion, and we're on a time schedule. I mean, let's take this all that people talk about and everything that we brought to the attention in DOJ. I mean, hands down. I mean, we got a concept. What a predicament. I just gather up what I go to, and I think I went to the $26 million settlement at DOJ for the agreement. I gave testimony for a lot of people always have a better hand of cards than when the cards are dealt that way. But you know, it's like we have two sides of like what is to come and what of everything, and if it's just throwing money at it, I mean, anybody can throw money at something and achieve something, but I mean, like, let's see. I mean, what if people just like got the work of what their concept of what they're trying to achieve, and like, what if it was? I mean, what if things had happened and then it was paid for? Like, leaving paying it forward. I mean, I believe in paying it forward. I mean. Is there results? I don't know what kind of results we have. I mean, the time. I mean, we're always running out of time. And what I see is just like a big, I mean, we're just taking steps back. We want to move forward. I think moving forward there's a ton of solutions out there, and there's ideas. And I don't mind giving my voice of opinion. I love to hear this stuff. I can hear this stuff all day long. I mean, you know, we sent the ship to the moon just to stick an American flag in the soil. I mean, this is America. I mean, people can come up with this stuff all day long. But it's like the things that I believe is, the only thing that's best thing to do, you know, and the best, I mean, I like to see this go to the trial and let the judge see what he has to say about it and take it all away. I mean, what's it going to hurt to hear the sides, and what's it really going to, I mean, it comes down to brass taxes. I mean, that's a lot. That's a big sum of money to be able to throw out there, and for what it's worth. What is it worth to you guys?
Thanks very much. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, counsel. On this matter of Dennis Rosenbaum's Chicago team being nominated with the assistance of our honorable judge, is it Muniz? Is that?
Demunis.
Demunis. It's a pleasure to hear him speak, and I appreciate his addition to the team. I researched Rosenbaum a bit and sent him an email, just kind of like, hey, you know, are you going to be a part of the problem? Are you going to be complicit in evidence destruction, for instance? So say Amanda Marshall came in around 2012, got this whole thing rolling. By 2013, when Benjamin over here was being beaten up, the police took the time and trouble to go back to the bar where they beat him up, approached him by his blind eye, took his traumatic brain injury, ground it into the ground, and they had the evidence destroyed. Then they brought Birkenbein in to investigate Benjamin's allegations of brutality. You guys have put this on my family. I want you to know that my mom is elderly. She just lost her spouse. And this is a lot of pressure on her. She's a 50-year nursing veteran. But to put this much suffering into our family has been very, very difficult for us. So when it comes to things like evidence destruction, nobody's offered to have help me get Ben to all his appointments, to get the medical investigations. Nobody from the city or the county. I get a lot of sympathetic faces. I had a 30-minute talk with Ms. Fritz a year ago on the phone. I've tried to get an appointment with the mayor, but I think nothing can negate the suffering of the people who are dead or who were almost killed, or the suffering of the families and the anxiety it gives them to feel that our voices aren't being heard. We don't feel like we've had access to justice. I can't tell you how many lawyers I've talked to. Coming from Los Angeles as a friend of Keith Fink, one of the kind of toughest guys I know, I'm startled by the lack of guts in the legal community. And I'm only trained as a paralegal here. But I like tough lawyers. I want someone who's going to hold the cops on the line and say, yeah, we love you, Daryl Turner, way to stand up against the Nazi. But this kind of behavior cannot go on, this kind of obstruction of justice. I mean, what, Preet Bharara, is that how you say his name? That guy is cool. Why can't we have an approach like that? Like, cut to the chase, get down to the corruption, don't worry about offending people, because lives are at stake. We are trampling on the graves of the dead. The James Chasses, Kendra, all the people who have died at the hands of the police. And there are officers who've died, and we do respect that they put their lives on the line. But when they approach somebody with severe federal disabilities that have been recognized for 20 years and brutally assault him, grind his face into the ground, take a surgically recentered eye that has been pulled over by a very delicate surgeon and then scrub it on the ground to the point that it's oozing out blood, where are you guys? Like, I hope that guy's interested in our story, because I need some help.
Thank you. Mr. Walsh.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. So far, as an activist, I'm not really interested in good words. The Chief Justice's good words impress me. But they're words. That's all they are, words. What you've done so far is you've appealed an honorable judge in the federal sector. That's going to bring shame on this city. You've completely ignored the profiling that goes on in this city. We don't trust the police department. We do not have an independent review board that has any independence. We do not have a human rights commission that does anything in the name of human rights. And now you've done a national search of 300 million people in the United States, and you came up with a white guy. He may be the best thing since sliced bread, but he's a white guy, picked by four white guys and one white woman in a city that is near explosion with your people that are crying out for justice and can't get it. This position is advisory. That's what people have to understand. He's got no power. It's advisory. The chief of police and the mayor can override him. That's not independence. Take that word independence out because it's offensive. When you say independence, you mean someone that can stand there on equal terms with other people and make decisions. He can recommend. That's it. You're going to spend $20 million on this stuff in the next 5 years, and all we get is recommendations. That's what we get. And the mayor is totally disconnected with the police department. And we are begging you as activists to do something, mayor. And what do? You select the next chief of police without consulting anybody that's really effective. You put your people that you know are going to rubber stamp what you do. And you have the Chief Justice come here and speak to us with wonderful words. And he's got a record to prove it. He is a good man. And so is the doctor. He's a good man. So what? When are we going to get justice? That's what we ask. And you're not doing it. You had three things to do, and you screwed up all three of them.
Thanks very much.
Believe it or not.
Next, please.
The next three are Charles Johnson, Crystal Ilinski, and Dan Handelman.
I'd like to defer to Mr. Handelman to go first, if he's ready.
Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and I sent comments from our group yesterday. I hope you had a chance to read those. I'm not going to read them all into the record, but the gist of it was that I was here on October 29 when we were taking the final public input on the three candidates and didn't testify that day because you had just the week before filed the appeal on Judge Simon's order, and I felt that the fact that only three people turned out for that, whereas 21 people turned out the week before, was sending a large message to you, that people had lost faith in the entire process because you decided to file this appeal. I don't think that distrust has gone away. And I think that, again, as Joe Walsh just mentioned, it's very nice that Chief Muniz was here today and was able to say these things, but we didn't hear those things until after the public comment process was over. These were things that happened behind closed doors, and this is the problem we're trying to overcome, the decision-making behind closed doors. The reason we had a public process for the COCL was so that we would not have the City Council making decisions on information that the community didn't have. And instead, we find out that he's committing to 3 days a week. I said one day in my testimony, my written testimony, after the decision's been made. And, you know, the Constitution originally said that slaves were three-fifths of a person. We're going to have three-fifths of a COCL here in Portland, but the rest of the team's going to be somewhere else. We need to have somebody here watching day-to-day things. The Portland police use force that generates a complaint one time every 9 days. They use force once a day on average, and we need somebody who's going to be here every day. And then if Justice DeMuniz isn't available, I haven't heard any talk of other staff being hired by the Chicago team to take his place if he's not available. And I, again, go back to the public process and the committee that was handpicked to make sure that there was voices of the mental health community helping decide who was going to be the COCL. And they all said, please don't pick the people from Chicago. And then you said, we're going to pick the people from Chicago. I see the DOJ is here today. I'm hoping that they're going to weigh in since they are, you know, part of the arbiters of what's going to finally happen with this. As Commissioner Fritz said previously, the community should have the final voice, but apparently the committee that said not to pick this team from Chicago is not part of that community voice. I also would like to point out that the other two candidates attended local meetings of the Community Police Relations Committee and the Citizen Review Committee in the lead up to the process, the final process here, whereas I didn't see anybody from the Chicago team trying to go out in the community here and meet people and see what was going on at these other meetings. And I also know that Alabama Ministerial Alliance Coalition sent a letter to you and the Human Rights Commission sent a letter to you. And last on a Monday evening, I heard some people from the Multnomah Youth Commission expressing their concerns about the decision being made. So we're not saying this by ourselves. We're hearing this from other people in the community.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much. Mr. Johnson?
Thanks. Again, for the record, my name is Charles Johnson. And I have, as we've remarked, there's a presence from the Department of Justice and probably from United States Attorney Amanda Marshall's office here. And I'm deeply concerned that they're just going to hop on board with praise of this non-local selection, even though the selection has been improved by the Honorable former Chief Justice's participation in the process. And I don't know where the community is going to break through to you about the public perception process. We know that one of the members of the Human Rights Commission resigned completely because you chose to go with the advice of the city attorney on a limited technical appeal. The city attorney seems to be becoming just a scapegoat for unpopular decisions. We have the city attorney blamed, communication process with the city attorney blamed for giving $5,000 to a cop who's now rehabilitated from his Nazi fetishism. And these are issues that are still burning in the community's mind, but they seem to not be on your mind anymore, not to mention the deaths since James Chassie. And so I hope that something will happen through former Chief Justice Dominguez or this doctorate person from Chicago who will, in addition to doing oversight of these complicated technical legal documents, help you realize that your many people in the community don't really have faith in this process, the people who maybe feel themselves most at risk. It's hard to say about people with mental health situations because the more extreme those mental health concerns are, the harder it is to really get to where they feel about policing and transitioning from independence to interfacing with services more. But I just really want to encourage you to have your ears open to every suggestion and inferred suggestion, especially that might come from the work of the Honorable former Chief Judge Dominguez, because we don't really have anything to go by on this Chicago team. As Dan pointed out, other groups, more local groups, showed the kind of community connection that we hope the Chicago team will also now implement now that they seem to be in the bag. But with this repeated process of the city council or the mayor's office saying, well, it has to do with the city's attorney's office, and then people getting unpopular political decisions of this limited technical appeal and $5,000 and a complete whitewashing of his disciplinary record for now Captain Kruger, who had a Nazi fetishism that we're sure is rehabilitated. You know, I hope that the 2015 will bring us a better level of trust and engagement between the citizens and the people on this council. Thank you.
Charles, since there's been a reference made to the existing U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, I think we should acknowledge that Amanda Marshall, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Oregon, is actually here. It's not just her chair or her office. She's here in personally.
And I hope that since she's an Oregonian now, she might even send somebody from her staff or personally come up and say that she feels that Mr. Dr. I think it's Rosenbaum, is totally competent, but there might have been a better interfacing with the community if a more local firm was chosen. Thank you.
Thank you. So is there anyone else that signed up to speak? And
yes, Mr. Lightning would like to speak.
Department of Justice is free to communicate with us now or any other time as they see fit, as we've seen. So. Welcome, Lightning. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning with the Lightning Humanitarian Lab. I guess one of the questions I have, since we have the U.S. Attorney Amanda Marshall here, is that possibly she could give her opinion on the appeal that the city wants to try to move forward against Judge Simon. In my opinion, I think we had great oversight by leaving the settlement agreement alone. And at this point, I think that's going to jeopardize the whole settlement agreement. So I'd kind of like to have possibly her opinion on that, if she could possibly do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, Ms. Marshall, come on up. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, and thank you. I wasn't going to make any remarks today, actually, but, you know, since Preet Bharara was referenced, and I'll have to text him and tell him how popular he is in my district. But I did have to just come up here and just generally say, you know, we're very glad that the city has moved forward on this process. We think that the addition of Chief Justice DeMunis is going to be a great addition to the ability of the COCAL to communicate and be open with the community. Also, as has been referenced in this discussion and prior discussions, the creation of the COAB that's going to help to inform the COCAL, which will bring those community voices to the center of any follow-up that goes on in terms of holding police officers accountable and moving us forward in this process. I think that's going to really address a lot of the concerns that were mentioned today. And I just want to commit to this council, to the mayor, and to the citizens of Portland and the community, our continued commitment to be there at the forefront as the Department of Justice, monitoring this process every step of the way, joining in partnership to make sure that the oversight that the citizens have asked for repeatedly throughout this process is there, not just from the COCAL and the COAB and the other institutional things that the city is doing to address the reforms that have been agreed to in the settlement agreement, but also on behalf of the Department of Justice in our monitoring role, which is written into the agreement as well. As we have throughout this process, we will continue to be present and available, accessible, and transparent to community members upon request, and also on our own as we seek you out to keep you informed. We will be there at the helm to make sure that this settlement agreement is successful for the City of Portland. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, is there anyone else that signed up to speak? If not, we'll take a roll call on the resolution.
Novick?
One thing I wanted to say is that a large part of the job of the COCAL will be gathering data and writing reports, and that's not just a ministerial exercise. I expect that there might be times when the COCAL is going to have some back and forth with the police bureau about, are they collecting the right data and presenting the right data in the right ways? And the fact that this team has a lot of experience analyzing data and drafting reports of this type is one of the things that was most impressive to me, in addition to their addition of Justice DeMunis to the team. I also wanted to say I really appreciate U.S. Attorney Marshall for being here today and for pointing out that the Justice Department will be accessible to members of the community. There has been some discussion in the last several weeks suggesting that people feel like they're just going to have to trust the city to do the right thing. And although I would hope people can trust the city to do the right thing, it's important to note that this case is, you know, this was an agreement between the United States Justice Department and the City of Portland, and the Justice Department will be monitoring our compliance, and community members should know that they can go to the Justice Department, not just to the presiding judge with any concerns they might have. Aye.
Fritz.
Thanks to U.S. Attorney Amanda Marshall for being here along with two of your staff. That's evidence to the community of Portland that you are indeed continuing to watch, continuing to be involved, and continuing to hold the City Council accountable. And let's be clear, the Council is accountable to the community for the implementation of this settlement. We get advice from the City Attorney. We're making the choices, and we're making them in a manner that is very uncomfortable for all of us. These are difficult discussions, these are difficult issues, and any time that anyone dies as a result of government actions or inactions, that's tragic, and it needs to be corrected to the extent that it can be corrected, and I am committed to that. The three teams that were finalists for this position, each of them had strengths and weaknesses, and the council has been working very diligently in the 6 weeks following the presentations to the public to see how we could best address the weaknesses of each of the teams. I think that with the addition of Chief Justice DeMunis, the Chicago team, as has been characterized, are far and away the strongest of the three finalists, that the expertise of the academic, Dr. Rosenbaum, combined with Dr. Amy Watson's expertise in mental health care and their interactions with people experiencing mental illnesses with the police, are outstanding. They are beyond any other team that we know of, whether they applied or not. So we've heard a lot from the community about doing nationwide searches for bureau leaders, and that's what we did in this process. We had a nationwide search to find the best COCAL. There is the concern that Justice DeMunis mentioned that we do things differently in Portland. We do things differently in Oregon, and there has to be a strong local presence. Justice DeMunis's experience with all of those months of mediation makes him an ideal candidate. Indeed, he was a candidate that was identified by some other advocates in the mental health communities. Attorney Marshall, we are going to be coming to the DOJ in later today even with a proposal from a community group that the mayor's staff and I talked with on Monday for an alternative process for selecting the at-large members of the Community Oversight Advisory Board to make sure that the community is not just a selection advisory committee, which is what the group was doing on September 29th, was advising the council. Our proposal for moving forward with selecting the at-large members of the advisory board is that that selection committee with enhanced membership as advised by DOJ attorneys and staff would make the selection of those at-large members. And so we'll be forwarding that proposal and having a discussion with you. We didn't get quite to consensus, but we got very close to consensus in that discussion. And I appreciate everybody who's engaging in these difficult conversations. The settlement is about addressing the disparities for people experiencing mental illnesses, and we are all very much aware that there are racial disparities in Portland that we still need to address. And so that it's complicated and it's vital. It's the most important thing that this council is dealing with and will be for the next several years. And so I will continue to participate and to work on it in sometimes in partnership with community members, sometimes in adversary with community members, because we're not going to always agree. And I think that had either of the other two teams or another unknown fourth team or fifth team been selected, those people would not have been the perfect match either. So I believe that the team that we have identified is very qualified and will do a good job. Aye.
Fish?
There was some testimony today that distinguished between words and deeds, and I agree with that distinction. Today we are selecting a COCAL, but we will be judged not on just the action we take today, but on whether the COCAL successfully engages the community, secures community trust, and helps us implement this ambitious settlement agreement. So we have no illusions about that, and the true benchmark of our success will not be today, but will be in the years to come. Commissioner Fritz and I tag-teamed, because only two commissioners can meet in these processes, and met with all of the candidates, and had a chance to have some very candid conversations about commitment to this process, personal values. And I learned a lot from her. She asked the Chief Justice some very uncomfortable questions, and everyone, very direct questions. I'm confident, based on all the information presented to me, that today we're selecting the strongest team. And that's taking nothing away from the strengths of the other candidates. A couple things really impressed me. One is Dr. Watson's personal experience, her personal life experience. We bring many things to the table in these kinds of exercises.
No. He's making a statement.
And I found her own life experience very compelling and relevant to the confidence we would have in her approach to this work. Justice DeMunis is someone of complete integrity. And I say that even though I never appeared before him as a lawyer, unlike my friend and colleague Steve Novick. But I knew that when he was the head of our court system, he enjoyed universal acclaim for his work. And he has, as he testified, made this idea of access to justice the cornerstone of his service from the first time he practiced law as a public defender right through to being the Chief Justice of our highest state court. I think he brings a unique set of life experiences and professional qualifications, which, as Commissioner Fritz noted, only strengthens the team. So I believe this is the strongest team, but I also acknowledge that in selecting this team, we're beginning a process and that we will ultimately be judged down the road on how successful they are in engaging the community, earning trust, and implementing the terms of the agreement. I want to thank all my colleagues for what I think has been an unusually thoughtful and transparent process. Aye.
Hales.
There's been a lot of talk about the DOJ agreement here today and other times. I would recommend that people periodically do what I do, and that is read it. This is my dog-eared copy. And there's also been a lot of talk in this room and in the community over the last 2 weeks about process. And the agreement actually is about both process and about results. And they're both important, but we have really focused a lot on process. And I want to remind people that the results matter too, and that our success in the changes we need to make in the police bureau includes but is not limited to what's called for in this document. There are other things we need to do to have the police bureau be truly responsive to and understanding of the people that it serves. And I'm committed to all that work, including all the provisions of this agreement. But there are things in this agreement that are very specific that we need to get done, and I want the community to let us know through the COAB and the COCAL, the Community Outreach Advisory Board and the community, the Compliance Officer Community Liaison, try to avoid using acronyms, let them know whether we're in compliance with Section 68E that says one standard ECW cycle, the officer shall reevaluate the situation to determine if after one cycle, subsequent cycles are necessary, including waiting for a reasonable amount of time to allow the subject to comply with the warning. F, officers shall make every reasonable effort to attempt handcuffing during and between each ECW cycle. G, electronic control weapon, i.e. a taser. Thank you, acronyms again. ECWs shall not be used on handcuffed or otherwise restrained persons unless doing so is necessary to prevent them from causing serious physical injury to themselves or others. There are very detailed things that we have to do differently in this agreement. Make sure that we're doing them differently. Come to the officer recruitment swearing in January. Take a look at the officers we're recruiting. Let us know if you think we are doing things differently in terms of who we hire, how we train them, what the rules are for what they do every day, whether they're actually doing those things or not, and what response is carried out by the city if they fail to live up to these expectations. Then there are things in here that are fairly general that will require interpretation. Item number 88, the United States expects the city's partners to help remedy the lack of community-based addiction and mental health services to Medicaid clients and uninsured area residents. That's a fairly general but achievable objective. Make sure that we're doing that. And again, not just the city of Portland. Let's make sure that we as a community are providing the mental health facilities that this agreement calls for, even if it is not binding on other parties like it's binding legally on the city of Portland. So I'm very interested in the process, and I think this has been a successful one. But you know my bias. I'm always more interested in tangible, real things. Are we hiring the right people? Do they have the right values? Are they out of their cars and on the streets talking to people? Are they de-escalating mental health situations again and again and again? Are they doing that better than they used to? So I hope we hear from the community 10 times as much in the next year about those substantive changes that this agreement requires us to make, as we have heard about the process issues that have seemed to take up so much of the air in this room, not ours alone. So good agreement. If it's carried out, we have competent people at the U.S. Department of Justice to make sure that we carry it out. We have competent citizens to watch and make sure as well. And I look forward to Justice DeMunis and his role, as well as to the rest of this team, in making sure that this is real in people's lives, on the streets, every day. That's what matters. Aye. I would recommend